Sometimes you might feel trapped between the right and the left. No one listens when you say taxation is theft.
But there's a place where people know harsh government brings tears. So grab some blue and adrenochrome. Let's make the timeline weird. Friends against government. Friends against government.
They're your
Welcome back from the Berg.
Best friends.
Thanks, man.
Hope it was good to be back. Hope it was a good
Phil,
time.
What's going on, dude?
Yeah, man. What's up? It's good to talk to you guys again.
Phil.
It's been forever.
It's been a minute.
So we got a good old convention to talk about, or I guess the online convention, right? That was, you had a good time. You had a good time, Phil. We were texting.
Yeah, it was. It was a doozy.
It was a doozy. So I guess before we get into it, we're probably not going to talk about George Floyd, although I would like us to
do
that soon. Every other libertarian podcast is going to be talking about George Floyd. Please go listen to them if you
want
to about George Floyd. And we were trying to get, I don't know if I want to say the name, but we're trying to get somebody on who's an expert in the field to talk about it. So hopefully that comes to fruition. And if it does, you'll get a Friends Against Government podcast episode about policing and that specific case. But stay safe, everybody in Minneapolis. Keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah, that was that was a particularly
gruesome.
I don't know. It just horrible. Feels like every time you're like, what the fuck? And,
yeah. It keeps getting more. But yeah, get that out of the way for now. Hopefully, we get to do that later on. Besides that, as we said, Childeberg was glad that was a good time for you. A lot of fellas there. I saw a lot of kilts.
A lot of boys.
Time. So did we hammer out the official linguistic designation for the third Childeberg?
It's going to be Ukrainian or Russian.
It's going to be Russian or Ukrainian.
I think it's like three or something or something like that. It's like very close to three, but it's not three.
Okay. So I'll have to look into that. Well, we're looking forward to the third one. Hopefully I'll be there this time. Barring any other coronaviruses or anything of the sort.
Just COVID-20.
Yeah.
Just come out with the next one, the next model.
Well, speaking of COVID-20, let's get into the main subject right away.
Yeah.
So, as everyone knows, this is a cryptid podcast with libertarian elements, so we like to talk about the Libertarian Party every once in a while, just to check in, see how things are. I am a party member. I was not made a delegate, so I got to sit back. I didn't watch the thing. I couldn't. After Joe Jorgensen, I was like, I don't know what's going on. There's no reason for me to watch this. And so that was the decision I made. And so, Phil, I contacted you, as I always do, and I said, Phil, the expert on the subject.
I did too, separately. I didn't know you did. I texted Phil because I saw people going like completely bananas on the timeline.
That's
I was like, what the hell just happened here?
It's between Phil, Chris Spangle, and Brian Nichols. I will text one of you guys and be like, all right, who is this? Who is this person? So, I wanted to ask you for the beginning, Phil. So you told me before you've never been to an LP convention before. So this was your first treat.
Yes, if you want to call it that. This is supposed to be my first time. I had plans of going to Childeberg. It was supposed to be awesome. So it sucks I missed all that. But this was supposed to be the first time at the LP. Being an actual member, you know, I've watched a few of them when they were on C-SPAN back in 2016. Mm. I followed back in 2018, but I just wasn't a delegate. And so this was my first rodeo.
So I guess, I don't know, what I would expect, I would like to have gone, that would have been my first one too. I guess what you would expect of the convention center is there's lots of little things going on, little stalls, lots of people to talk to, all that. But what was the format? How did they decide to organize this thing? I'm sure a lot of our listeners probably didn't even know it happened.
Yeah, that's a story and it's in and of itself, man. Shit. So there was a 9-hour meeting. It was an LNC meeting for 9 hours, just deciding on what would there be. Like, how would we handle this? Because it became kind of clear that Austin wasn't going to have us, and we'd have to act the implausibility clause of their contract with Austin and the hotel with the event. And God, so they went on this pain. So then it became apparent that there was this movement, this undercurrent, where they wanted certain, this cabal that we, that you regularly discuss with me about, usual suspects.
Our usual suspects, yeah.
Yes, they desperately wanted an online convention, and this was the time when Amash had just joined in to the race, and they, it almost like things just fell into their lap, and they were like, well, this is a good way, because a lot of people in the campaigns were really irritated with the fact that Amash joined in so late, and that they needed to kind of to steamroll Amash, because it wasn't going to be a cakewalk like a Gary Johnson was.
Right.
So they needed to move fast. And in order to happen, they wanted to go to a full online convention. Nick Sarwark and his few of his cronies up there, they wanted to do a definite online convention. And so a lot of the problems that they faced was the bylaws section of the LP stipulates that there's no stipulation for an online convention. I mean, the bylaws were written, 1971? So there's really no fallback. So they had to go in and suspend the rules, try to figure this out. Well, the thing with the Mises Caucus people, and even like the Radical Caucus, everyone kind of had this, they knew they were, Nick had some type of ulterior motive. And so slowly but surely, all these things started floating out and coming to light, where Nick wanted to have an online convention so he could get Amash on the ticket. And since he said he wasn't running again, he endorsed Joe Bishop Henchman as his pretty much handpicked replacement. And he knew that an online convention would allow a lot of people to participate, because if they just had a physical convention on Memorial Day weekend in Austin, that a lot of the younger delegates, which is what mostly the Radical and Mises caucuses are comprised of, would show up, and then they would end up rolling the party. So they had their mission, as they were going to do everything they could to make everything as much as online as possible, and kind of fought them on it. You know, it didn't really work. They are, you know, it just, it came down to this compromise. Gosh. Oh man, I'm like forgetting. There's so many different things that happen. Like, it gives you a headache, you know, all the crap that they try to pull. Because like, I guarantee you, like 10 times, I'm going to say during the course of this, oh yeah, that's right, I forgot about this.
Yeah.
Now you're saying that they wanted to push for an online convention because they believed that it would be in their benefit. And now I had somebody who works for the Mises Caucus tell me something to the opposite. That it would have been more beneficial for them to just have the specific delegates be able to go to the convention, because the vast majority of voters wouldn't go. Now, was that just that individual assuming that someone like Jacob Hornberger was going to have the most popular support, or is there some truth to that theory that maybe there was a good reason for them to try and keep the convention space?
Well, okay, so I think you might be saying the same thing I was saying, is that we wanted to have a physical convention. And
okay, yeah.
It was to the benefit of the, I guess, I mean, their fear was, okay, so Dan Fishman, the executive of the, you know, of the LP, the executive director, he told an LNC member straight up, from who works on the, it's called the COC, and they are the convention oversight committee.
Mm-hmm.
He told them, straight up, that we can't have an online, or we can't have an in-person convention, or else the Mises Caucus will take over. Those were his words.
So that, so right. that side believes that the Mises Caucus has popular support.
Yeah, it's definitely growing.
But I mean, like, popular support in Texas. Like, I don't, because I,
well, because we would be willing to show up, because yes, we're okay. Younger, we're healthier, where a lot of the older guard of the party is more concerned about coronavirus. They're more concerned about their health, as they're probably much older than, say, us younger people who are in our 20s and 30s.
Okay.
Pussies. You can just say it. They're pussies.
There you go. Yeah. Perfect. There we go.
Not like big, strong, virulent men like us.
Yes.
Okay, so...
Strapping young lads.
So then... Okay, well, first of all, that's encouraging. I like to see that. I'm looking at the first place by popular vote and first place by delegate vote in the first round. It's very interesting, the things you see. Hornberger has a lot of support. Really interesting to see that. So there must be some case to that. But it is interesting. You would think if it had real, if the Mises Caucus had real popular support, they wouldn't want to put it online, because that would just open up the floodgates for even more
people. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
So
they wanted a physical convention. They wanted to travel.
That's right.
And also, not just for that reason, but there was, okay, so the California LP straight up told them, said, look, if you go to an online convention, we will not sign off on it. And we will lose ballot access to 46 million people in the state of California if you go forward with an online convention and have a president and vice president selected by an online convention, because they, in this 9-hour meeting, they literally determined for 9 hours, fought to determine, is online a place?
Oh my lord, dude!
And is the internet a place?
Yeah. Why? Dude, why does that? But they represent seats in counties.
Right. And so so in California, they said this would be against our bylaws. And if we put forward a candidate, any party in, say, the Green Party or the Democratic Party, Republican Party of California, could sue California Libertarian Party and get them off the ballot because they didn't go about their bylaws.
Oh, my God.
So it's within the California state bylaws or the California LP bylaws?
The LP bylaws.
The LP bylaws in the state of California, or the national.
Yeah, national.
Okay.
So that's the problem. Is we have these bylaws set, and if you don't follow them, at the bylaws, you open yourself up for lawsuits.
Really?
Okay. So yeah, and that was their big concern. So it wasn't just the Mises Caucus being like, we want to take over, that type of shit. There was some of that, but for the most part, people were scared. Like, even some of the older people, like in my delegation in Maryland, there was other people from like the COC who really aren't friendly with the Mises Caucus at all. But they were like, no, we need to have a physical convention. Like, we have to have it. It's the bylaws dictate such. So what we ended up doing in the Mises Caucus, and they came to this compromise of where, okay, so we'll gavel in on the Memorial Day weekend, and then we'll suspend the bylaws, and we'll try to ratify a two-part convention, one online to pick the president and vice president, so that way we can get our candidate out there and campaigning instead of having to wait another month. And then we'd establish that in Orlando from July 9th to the 12th, we'll have all the rest of the business.
Oh, so we have a kind of a secondary LP convention happening in Orlando in when? July?
9th to the 12th, and it's because that way we can ratify the results there. And so technically it would still be since it's the same convention, it's not two conventions. Mm-hmm. You got to get that right.
Right.
Piss a lot of people off.
Yes.
It's the same convention. It's the
same convention.
It's just the second part of it. And that will be in July in Orlando, and that will ratify the results in person. So that way it satisfies everybody, really.
Who are the
Go ahead.
Can I ask two questions before we move too far forward?
Dude, go for it.
The first one is, what is the state of affairs? There was that huge squad of people like Dave Smith and Tom Woods and such that were joining the Mises Caucus. Where are we at with all of them?
Well, they literally, between Joshua Smith, Scott Horton, Tom Woods, Dave Smith, they have all brought in more people to the LP in I think it's like more than any other non-election year since like 2005.
Jeez.
Like we're now a growing momentum of, you know, this party. And like,
setting the stage. That's still on. They're involved.
Okay.
The other question is, I thought Justin Amash dropped out like not too long ago. Was that just all part of the play?
Well, he dropped out. He pulled, like, no one saw this coming. But from what we were hearing behind the scenes is, look, Nick was stepping down because he had worked out a deal with Joe Bishop Henchman. I guess he would, and I don't know, some type of, God, it's like there's so many rumors. There's so many like things where people leaked what happened, but they didn't want to put their name on it. but there was some type of backdoor deal, I don't know, something like that. But for the most part, what I was trying to say is that Nick was going to drop out to become the vice presidential nominee with Justin Amash.
Oh wow!
That was his intentions.
That's what was to believe from what.
So he wasn't resigning in order to leave the party. He was resigning in order to change a position.
Right. Well, okay. He says so many things. We'll get to that later.
Okay.
But Amash, I guess what had happened was, Amash's campaign thought that since he wasn't welcome with open arms, which I guess he had thought and what was it promised to him would happen.
He would have been if he did it 2 or 3 months ago. He would have been like, we would have all been like, oh my God, yes.
Yeah. But he showed up like, what, 3 or 4 weeks before the convention?
Yeah, like a fucking diva. Like a diva.
Right. And well, also the thing was he was pissed because, so once they agreed to everyone wanted the compromise except for Nick and his little round of suspects because they didn't want anything in person. They wanted to do it all online on Memorial Day weekend. So once Amash's campaign found out that they were going to be chosen online and technically wouldn't be ratified until August, he didn't feel comfortable campaigning on essentially what would be a preferential poll.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't think that was significant enough, and so that's why he backed out.
So after Nick finds out that because it's going to be online and not ratified in the exact same period of time, there was going to be, what, more risk towards that run, that it wouldn't have been worth it? That, okay.
Why are you going to drop millions of dollars in case something happens where there's another outbreak of COVID and only a handful of us can get there and we would be the quorum, I guess, like Mises Club people, and then we say, no, we want Hornberger, not Amash.
So you don't ratify him, right? So that process, so there is not.
He was scared of that.
So there's not that this is a likelihood, because this is never a likelihood, but there is a non-zero chance that even Joe Jorgensen could be not ratified. There's a non-zero chance. That's still a possibility. Non-zero. I'm not counting on it.
We're talking maybe 0.5%
I don't count
not
on
a
it.
High.
I just ask to understand the process. How?
Yes.
That
yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Okay,
so that was big contention, and Nick just threw a hissy fit, and I mean he did everything he could, and so for weeks we were saying like we're hearing all sorts of chatter that from people, because people once they saw how this went down, and the way Nick tried to get his way, a lot of people who are supported Nick, endorsed him, came forward and said, I'll tell you, he said some things like against Joshua Smith. He does not want, his only goal to be in the party right now is to make sure Joshua Smith does not win LNC.
That's right. And actually, before we go forward, can we go slightly back? We were originally going to do an episode
sure.
on what was going on there, but not to get too in the weeds on that. Did you end up having him on? I didn't see whether or not you ended up having him on.
Joshua Smith. We've had him on before too. I actually drove down to Alex when we were still doing our podcast in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
We're up in Baltimore, Punk Rock Libertarian. So I went down to Alexandria, which is about like an hour, like 50 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
I went down there and picked him up. This was like 2 Decembers ago. And I went and picked him up. He came on the podcast before, and then. But yeah, we did just recently have him on again.
So you had him on to speak about what was going on with him, and can you obviously? I'm just going to description point them towards your episode, but just the TLDR of what that was, what happened, what was his grievance?
Well, I mean, someone, I think it was Aaron Andrews. She's a part of the LNC, and she came forward and said that Nick had assigned him. Had assigned Joshua Smith for some type of committee with the intention of him failing. And he straight up told, I believe it was her. I get lost and confused. There's so many names and moving parts here, but he told them that I want him to fail. And he actively got mad when people tried to help him on this committee. And he said, why are you doing this? Let him fail. And he was told well, this could cost the party $1,000. And he said, well, I don't care.
So all right. So Nick's grievances with Josh, that was what that was. Just generally,
yeah,
still the same old thorn in the side. Okay, all right. So you got that coming into this.
Oh, yeah.
What was Josh's place in this convention now that it was online?
He is the he's an at-large member of the LNC, so he just kind of sat there and didn't really do much. You know, I don't blame him. There's every time he sticks his head. I mean, he's now wrapped in another just manufactured bullshit drama that happened just like last night.
They do it all the time to him, man. It's just really ridiculous.
It's so blatant and so obvious. And I admit he'll admit this too. Like he does kind of sometimes, like, he opens himself up to this where maybe he shouldn't do some things, but he does it anyway. But it's just so many. He could sit there and just be nice and be as respectful as he wants, and people still, like, just throw all these awful accusations at him. So it's like, he's damned if he does, and he's damned if he doesn't.
Okay. So, I mean, so that's all the headache of the things that led up to the convention. Or is there more? Or is there more? I don't want to move forward.
There's more, man. Like, there's just more, like, there's other accusations that came out that they said Nick's main focus with the LNC was to move it as far left as possible. Like, that was something that people came on it, and I wish they would have, because a lot of them I know, some I don't know, but I can't tell the stuff I do know, but, like, it's just, there's so much out there, and people are just afraid, because this is what, you know, Aaron Andrews and John Phillips, who were big supporters of Nick, they went on the Drunk and Disorderly podcast and pretty much went on this tirade. So there's like you can find like a 13-minute clip of them kind of spilling the beans about how they told John Phillips, I think Nick told him, either you get on the train or you get on or you lay down in front of it. You know, making threatening calls to people and telling them, you need to do this or I'll ruin you. And just shit like that. And he's been doing. And it's just, it's so apparent. And I guess now, as he's on his way out, allegedly, he's just,
allegedly.
Just doing, being antagonistic. Yeah. And that's what we kept saying. The people in the Mises Caucus and Radical Caucus, like, what our main goal was at this point, and I feel comfortable telling everybody is for this online convention, we wanted Jacob Hornberger and Spike Cohen. Those were our guys that we were backing.
Oh, you did want Spike Cohen. I didn't know that. Okay. Okay. That's good. So we're going to talk about Spike Cohen, obviously, because I know less than nothing about him. But okay, that's good to know. Yeah. So.
But we wanted, another thing we wanted to do is make sure there was no changing of the agenda to do anything other than the compromise, which was VP and president only. Then we adjourn and go to Orlando. And any attempt to add anything else on would be a trick by one of Nick's cronies and one of his people. And so we were saying this for weeks and weeks, like, this is what we're afraid of. Everyone look out for it. I was warning people in my delegation, like, this is what's going on. And they're like, no, it'd be dumb of Nick to do anything else like that. So that that was kind of our anticipation leading up to what happened on the weekend.
Okay. So then let's talk about what happened on the weekend. Let's begin.
So wait, hold on. Okay. This online meeting, is it just like 1,000 little Zoom cubes on the screen,
it was very silly looking.
That was freaking.
Yeah.
I mean, I have not been a part of a convention, so I don't know any other way, only from what I've seen on TV and from what other people have told me. So it kind of went better than what you would assume, but you're right. There was 1,000 people on the Zoom call. Yeah.
Were you just clicking through squares looking for hotties, scooping for
No, them? No.
Man, I probably would have been.
I would have been trying to find people I know.
Yeah.
Catch some people, some boomer who didn't realize his, you know, camera's on, just picking his nose.
Oh, where most people went camera off, I would have been so camera on the whole time.
D7, picking nose.
Who was in, I feel like this is actually an important question. Who was in the functional control of the Zoom call?
I think that was Dan Fishman, the executive director.
So Dan Fishman was given the power to, he was the one who started the call. Okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So he was given the power to be able to mute people and things of that nature. Okay.
They had the power to mute and it got abused big time.
Really?
It got very much abused, where people were jumping in line because the panelists, who are all like the LNC members, like the secretary, Karen Ann Harlos, and all these other people they could just speak because they were unmuted and they were on camera. So they could just speak. And so in order to speak, you had to click this button that said raise hand, And then you also had to put your motion, anything in the Q&A section, like you could put in what you wanted to do, or like privilege motion, raise your hand. And then they put you on a list, and you could see kind of the list. It was so very convoluted. Like, you could see the list of them typing out people's names and who was coming on next. And there was people that waited like 3 hours to raise their hand to bring up a motion, and they didn't get answered at all.
Damn.
And but in the meantime, people were jumping in who had access to like the chair, like the chairs of every state, I think. They were able to like get in first before everyone else, and they kind of abused the Roberts rules.
I was gonna say, I guess you were following like Roberts Zoom rules, more or less.
Yeah, it was pretty fucked up, but yeah. So people were very, very mad about that, and even I raised my hand when we just skipping forward, but like we'll come back to, but like even like at the end of it, I raised my hand in the whole last 2 hours. My name was on like one of the last few people on the list, and they never let me talk. They actually put down my hand.
No.
Like digitally put down my hand. I was like, that's wild. Fuck.
Yeah, that's crazy. Jesus. Yeah. So how does the convention sort of begin? How does it start? When do they, I got an email about it with the Zoom link in it.
Yes. So I had my setup was going on where we had the agenda was supposed to be ratified on Friday. And they had to suspend the rules to adopt the motion to have a two-part convention. And pretty much we knew from the start, this is where they're going to start trying to put their little things in saying, okay, let's add on the chair position and chair and vice chair onto this meeting. And so they tried doing that. We had to keep voting them down. And for the most part, the majority of the delegates were against that. And because what we had going on is my Maryland delegation, we had a Slack room. Where we go in Slack, and so every other, like, I think it was, we voted to have a consensus voting in our Slack room, as opposed to where everyone else was using this thing called, like, Election Buddy or something, let's call it, and they had to vote through their email, like, it would come up, and then they would have to, like, select what they want, whereas our state chair, who was in, you know, who was assigned to our Maryland state, he would just take in everyone's name. Like, we'd say, okay, everyone vote. And whenever we'd vote in the group, he'd take that and just immediately present that to whoever was taking that. I forget who it was. But and so that ours worked out pretty flawlessly. But, oh, my God, so many times Pennsylvania lost their delegation sheet, like, in the email. And they were like, oh, we have to do it again. Send out the email again.
Oh, my God.
And so that's what a whole lot of we were waiting for. It got pretty annoying towards the end.
Jesus. And so it wasn't supposed to be 9 hours, obviously. That's just...
It should have been 9 hours of just that. Usually at conventions, it's usually people coming up to the microphone, inserting their... Like, they just like hearing themselves talk, and they'll give, like, a little speech and say... And there was a little bit of that, which is... But for the most part, this was, we were dealing with technical difficulties. People's internet was going out. It was not as bad as we anticipated.
That's what we got to do, Bird, at the next convention is hop up there and take the microphone, and we just actually record a full hour-long episode.
Podcast it up?
Yeah, just podcast it. Completely pretty unrelated.
Say point of personal privilege. That's all you got to do.
Oh, yeah. Can we,
all right, guys, everyone, welcome to the Friends Against Government podcast. Today we're here to talk
like
about...
Like a filibuster. You're talking like some sort of a filibuster.
Who cares what we're talking about?
Pretty much.
Oh, man, that would be good.
And so, oh, God. Nick started.
Did anybody do it? Did anybody fill? No, I guess that wouldn't have benefited Nick to do a filibuster. He actually wanted to do more stuff, not less stuff.
Well, he'd get mad. He was like, I know, stop it. I know what you're doing. I don't like it. Stop it. He'd tell that to, he was doing that big time in the 9-hour meeting that they had, the LNC meeting, like a few weeks ago.
Because as chair, his job is to keep the rule. Like, that's right.
And that's what everyone says they love about Nick is, oh, he can run a meeting. I mean, I guess. I mean, if you.
I'm sure. How hard is it to run a meeting?
I can run a meeting.
I was going to say, yeah.
I can run a meeting.
If you've had any experience in business, you could probably run a meeting. but I mean, right. I guess Nick was. Nick,
are you guys meeting? Would you like me to run it? Yeah, I can run one. I can run a meeting.
I can run it. I know how meetings work. People talk, and you know. Anyway, yeah. Well, there you go. So convention begins, opens up.
People keep trying to change the agenda. Eventually, we get it settled in, and we get through our credentialing process done. that night, which and what there was that? A lot of it got heated at times. I can't exactly remember what, man. Like,
what,
I,
no,
was,
what is a credentialing pretty, process? I'm not. I don't know what that means. They just verify. Well, you everybody. Had to
like register who you are, your delegation you're at, and you had to make sure that you signed in each time.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's pretty much it. But and the most of it was just. Topping agenda. That's where the most consternation came in.
Really? Like, so there was just a constant.
It wasn't that bad, though.
So it was just. So this is what interests me. So Nick kept allowing the motions to, like, he kept allowing people to make motions to change the agenda.
Or... Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, anyone technically could. He was just immediately. He was, and then like there were certain times where you could see who was up next, but another. Person would come in, and then they would, and I was ignoring it, or and he'd be like, "Oh, I didn't see it. I'll get to that. Or don't worry, we'll put you back in." Like, it was one of those things where I don't know if it was on purpose or it was just because the whole confusion of a online convention maybe threw him off. I don't know, but it was annoying how the first motion that came in was to change the agenda, and it was like, "Oh, well, there it is." You know,
really? Like, how soon in was that?
What's that?
How soon in was that that they
Oh, geez, just about as it's after they accepted the credential report of who was all in the meeting, and the people were like, "Well, my states don't add up to the numbers I see on your sheet there," and it, after that,
so immediately
when all that crap got away,
almost immediately when people could start having their say, they people were already starting to push towards changing the agenda.
Yes.
And the point of changing the agenda would have been to move to ratify on the same day or to move to elect other positions on the same day.
Yeah, moved to they were trying to move to add on the voting of the chair and vice chair that day. I think what that was.
Got it.
First motion was. And each time, I mean, I think at this point, and that's why I was so irritated, because everyone's telling me, no, Nick won't do that. The will of the delegates said they want to have, because you could see the poll, like when it would, they would say, okay, do you guys accept the motion to suspend the rules and adopt this, you know, extra thing on vote? And it came out resoundingly no. I mean, it was almost like 3-1 came out and were against it. But he kept on allowing these things forward, and then. It went really remarkably well. Like, it wasn't much fighting. It was more of us plotting, because I had, like I said, on my laptop, I had the Zoom chat up, and then on my phone, I had the Slack meeting with my Maryland delegation, and then my earphone, I was on the Discord with the Mises Caucus people. So I was doing all three of these things, and my buddy Alex with Punk Rock Libertarians, he's also a delegate, so he was here, and me and him, and we're just crushing beers, like all sec. I mean, we just
Dutch Rudder.
We went through a whole lot.
Oh, nice. This is the future of politics. Yeah. This is the future of voting, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Staying
palling down with your best bros, drinking beers, and listening to Slack.
Vote on Discord.
Yeah.
So that's so interesting to me. So you had the national convention going on, like you said. You had the Slack chat of your county. Or of your state. Oh, and so you had your state's Slack, and then you had the Mises Caucus in the ear.
Yeah.
So when you, so this is, I just to understand the psychology of it, obviously there's, some groups are coordinating, so you're coordinating with the Mises Caucus throughout the entirety of the thing, and your state and the National Party, you're more just participating.
Yeah, we also had MLB Network on. We were watching old baseball playoff games.
Oh, nice.
And of course, we can't not mention, you know, the Dutch Rudder that was happening just beneath the surface of the screen. And every now and then, an overly vigorous hand might just jump up right into the view of the camera, but it'd be swiftly brought back down.
let me ask you one more thing, Phil. As far as the organization of it goes, in your Slack chat, what are they coordinating? What are they organizing? What are they doing? In the Slack chat, are they voting for statewide positions as well?
No. So we had, like I said, we did the Slack thing. Like, we agreed that we weren't going to use their election buddy thing. And so this we were just going to use our Slack chat as our reason to vote. So, like, when they said, okay,
it was
here's
just
the first
as a medium to vote. is why you were using Slack. Okay. Yes. So there was no conversations in the Slack.
Oh no, we could. We were. Okay. We were going back and forth. They were okay. Let's have a 5-minute discussion before we make the vote. Who? Why do you want your candidate? You know, whatever. And so everyone's kind of typing and arguing. My job was also the runner.
Oh, that's so interesting. Someone wasn't. So the state, the states said, let's have a conversation about it before we do it. That's not like voting that you when you normally think of voting, you normally think they discourage any sort of influence right beforehand.
That guy was pretty cool. Like my state, the state chair guy who was running it, he was like, if you guys want to talk about it, like talk about it for a few minutes. And then once I say everyone vote, you just write the, you know, type in the last name. We'll count it up. We'll make sure it's everyone. If we were short a name or someone who voted, I would have to go find them. And if I couldn't get a hold of them, I'd have to go submit an alternate to become
a
delegate.
So your votes were not anonymous either. As a delegate, your votes are not used. I don't think votes are anonymous for delegates anyway, but that's interesting to know. Huh.
I think they are, though. They would have been anonymous, but voted. Yeah. We didn't care. I mean, everyone really knew
who cares,
state. Ours is pretty heavily Mises Caucus in Maryland. So everyone kind of knew, as me as the state coordinator, everyone knew where I stood on this issue.
That's right. Well, I like that. I like the idea that there was conversations going on right beforehand, because at least at the end of it, when you get a person you don't like, you at least understand why the other person was maybe voting that way. That's a good, better way to do it. I actually like that. Okay, so that gets done. I guess we're progressing through. And then I think this is when the world, and by the world I mean the World Wide Web, became aware that the convention was going on. I guess not the first round of voting, but the final round of voting when we find out Joe Jorgensen is nominated. So can you maybe give me, what was the environment like when that vote stood? What were you guys all saying to one another? Were you really convinced Hornberger was going to do it? Did you think you had everything in place? Was it a shock?
I hate this now because, like, I wish I knew that other people knew, but there was some. It's apparent in the LP politics is different than other politics, like political parties, where infighting is very discouraged, even though it happens way too much. But so when candidates though argue and they attack other candidates, it's very, very looked down upon. And for the last few weeks, Jacob Hornberger was doing that to Amash and then to Joe Jorgensen. And I mean, rightfully so. He wasn't making up things. He was just, he was pointing out things that he didn't, you know, agree with in their platforms or what they agreed with or what they had said at other debates. And there was a kind of, it was almost like an open secret that a lot of people were discouraged. Like, we were trying to get in Jacob's ear and telling him, hey, stop doing that. Stop doing this, stop doing that. You know, like, you're doing great on everything else, but, like, if you just change your tact. And he was just very stubborn and said no. And I love Jacob. We had him on the podcast, and he was great. And, you know, I still, like, you know, I'm proud. I was on his campaign. And,
I mean, he
and,
nearly
know,
did it.
For him.
He nearly did it. It was not that far off.
Yeah. We knew that if he didn't win on the first round of voting, there was just no chance for him to win. Mm-hmm. And once it came out, we were like, well, there it is, you know. And I think it was, 3 or 4 votes, rounds of voting, and they finally went down to Joe Jorgensen. And it was very interesting because a lot of people were dropping out and endorsing Joe Jorgensen because that was – Joe Jorgensen's campaign, in my opinion, really formed as the anyone but Hornberger.
Is that the case?
Campaign.
Is that how she's viewed outside of the context of the Mises Party?
I don't think that – no. Well, everyone liked Joe Jorgensen. I mean, she ran with Harry Brown and
I've heard she's pretty legit. Yeah, I heard she's legit. It's just she came out of nowhere at first.
Yes.
For me. Definitely. And I don't want to say she came out of nowhere for the party because she participated in every single debate. That's my bad, not hers. Mm-hmm. But
We had known that if he wasn't, you know, if Hornberger's not going to win, you know, the first round, he wasn't going to win at all. And that was, and so we were hoping for, we were just kind of shocked that it was Joe Jorgensen. It was okay. And then it sort of, everything started making connections because, like I said, it had formed the people who joined her campaign in the latter weeks before the actual convention were a lot of the anti-Mises Caucus people, a lot of the pragmatists, because the it's so funny because she won the pragmatist caucus's endorsement, and which is weird because she's pretty much like a hardcore libertarian. Not some of these like, but the thing is we feel like in the Mises Caucus we keep on saying like we shifted the Overton window of the pragmatists in the LP because they wanted Lincoln Chafee at first, and we shot that down. You know, they wanted Judge Jim Gray. They wanted Amash.
And Jim Gray win New York? Oh yeah, he did.
Well, it's funny is I have to mention this, but on Punk Rock Libertarians, we're the ones who sank his whole campaign.
Oh shit, did you?
Yeah, he came on and he was talking with Matt and Jared, and he started talking about, like, we got onto the topic of jury nullification and stuff like that, and he was like, well, he eventually started getting really angry, upset about it, and he said he would arrest pamphleteers passing out any type of jury nullification.
Jim Gray said that?
Yes, he said this. He said, in my court, I would have them arrested. What and then he started getting, yeah. So he started getting really... He started getting really, really upset, and he was like, "I just want to talk about it." Like, and he moved on. So when he opened, so that got a lot of traction, and that got us a lot of views on our podcast.
Serious bitch move. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, and so the first thing he does when he comes on the debate, the last debate they had that was hosted by John Stossel, he came out and apologized for those comments. He's like, "I recently made some comments on my campaign about jury nullification," and he pretty much tried to walk back everything he had said.
Guys, I know I've sounded like a homo in the past, but I've been trying to straighten it out. Sorry about that.
Larry Sharp's running mate. I don't
know. Yeah.
How does that square?
Larry Sharp endorsed like 6 candidates during this convention.
Yeah, fair enough. He did. Yeah, he really did. And he was mad as hell when people were like, "Why did Larry drop out?" He was mad. People were like, "Why'd you drop out?" He's like, "Look, I said this from the beginning." he was very upset. There was a lot of anger that day.
We said if he endorsed you, that was a kiss of death, pretty much. Because every time you endorse someone,
Jesus,
you would lose the second round of voting. It got pretty funny. But yeah, so back to this whole thing. So I mean, I wasn't sure. I thought maybe it was. At this point, I was like, okay, well, Gray's out. I mean, he got so much shit for that. That goes comments. And once the Pragmatist Caucus endorsed Joe Jorgensen, that's what kind of made her the front runner. And so we were like, okay, well, it's neck and neck. It's a toss up right now. And and so, yeah, when she came out and she won, I mean, it sucks because, you know, it happened to me in 2016. I wanted Austin Peterson, election cycles of Ron Paul. I wanted Ron Paul to win. You know, so I'm used to not backing the winner. I mean, hell, I'm in the LP, so I never back a winner. But even my choice of losers, I didn't get my guy, you know, and campaigning so hard for him. He's kind of sucks, but like, if you look at it, it's like, this is the first real like libertarian that you've had running in like three or four election cycles.
Yeah. I wasn't upset about
it. Back to Harry Brown.
Yeah. I was not upset about it. Was really not upset about it. Once I found out who she was. Once I found out who she was.
Well, but I have to ask the question, and I guess it sounds like she has the street credentials, but I have to ask the question, why were the pragmatics endorsing her? Like, is there a backdoor plan here?
No, I just think they ran out of people that they could endorse.
It was a very thin selection.
Thin field.
I think she does have this element where she's not as, she needs to get better speaking. I will say that. And towards the end of her like her last debate and stuff, she got a little better with it over what I had seen. So I think she's definitely going to be good, especially with Spike running with her. And I think that now that she has all these people now coming to her aid that I know who are now in her circle, in her campaign, they're running all of her Twitter accounts and her Facebook. And I guess right now, they're waiting. Apparently she has to do a whole different new campaign because her campaign logo looks like a daycare center's logo.
I like it. I kind of like purple? It. Yeah, the purple Lady Liberty. Oh. Yeah, I kind of like the purple.
So embarrassing.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's. Dude? I don't know. I think the LP could use a feminine touch. I don't know.
Yeah, but not like. like a preschool teacher's touch.
I don't know. You know what? Actually, I'm looking closer at it. It's a lot less detailed than it looks in a small shot. Yeah, wait, you're right. It's a little simplistic.
What am I looking up?
You should look up 2020 Libertarian Party presidential primaries, and then scroll down to nominee Jo Jorgensen, and you'll see her campaign logo on Wikipedia. So let me just, before we continue, I want to let everybody know. Oh, maybe we can go through this because I have a few people to ask you about your opinions on how they did, how they behaved. Let me read through some of the relevant characters. Okay, so the people who made it into the later rounds, which is every round past the nomination round, was Adam Kokesh. Adam Kokesh has now endorsed Jorgensen. 2,000 somewhat popular vote, 6%, 77 delegates. Got Jim Gray, 98 delegates. He also endorsed Jorgensen. John Mons, who 147 delegates. One person voted for John Mons in the popular vote. Can you give me a little bit of something on John Mons? I don't know whether or not he publicly endorsed this, but I know a few people who are John Mons guys.
Mons is great. I think I really like his messaging, but he gets a little boring when he just talks and he just goes on. And so much is where his last, speech that he made before the voting started, he literally just, like, after he didn't win, I guess he wanted to become vice president. Mm-hmm. And so they gave him a concession speech. And it was he gave so many minutes up just to say, oh, well, I would accept the nomination if Jo Jorgensen wanted me. And I was like, really? Like, that's it?
That's it?
You know?
He ended up endorsing Jo Jorgensen. There's a pattern here. Mm-hmm. It's just very nice to see that they all end up doing this. Next up is Vermin Supreme. 4,288 in the popular vote. That's just under 10%. 171 first round delegates. Vermin is Vermin.
Vermin is Vermin.
After Vermin lost, I can safely be like, yeah, I really love Vermin. I can really say I don't have to consider Vermin as the president of the country yet, but I really like Vermin. And then eliminated in the later rounds, final person there, Jacob Hornberger, 8,986 in the popular vote. That's about 20%. First round delegates, 236. Final delegates, 285. And compare that to Jo Jorgensen, the winner, 4,578 in the popular vote. That's about 10%. 248 in the first round as far as delegates, and 524 in the final round of delegates. So I guess everybody eventually realized, yeah, got to just vote for her. So Hornberger was knocked out essentially last.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Vermin was right before that.
Yeah. Well, he actually didn't get eliminated on that vote. Jorgensen, because he didn't drop. Everyone was hoping that he would drop out and then endorse Hornberger, but he didn't come to that because she got her 51% on that last vote. So it was a three-horse race. At the end.
Really? So Vermin was at the very end.
Yeah, I think it came down to 20 delegate votes, that she... Yeah, so... So we were... that's why we knew. It wasn't going to happen, and Vermin wasn't going to really drop out and endorse anyone. I know Kokesh won't endorse anyone but himself.
He's endorsed Jorgensen.
Well, now.
Okay. Yeah, everybody, it seems like everybody who lost has endorsed Jo Jorgensen.
Oh, yeah, and Hornberger was very, very gracious. Just was so, I'm so proud of this election. I had so much fun. And I could tell, it was very genuine. He just loved it.
Not a horrible person. Not a horrible person to lose to. It's better than Gary Johnson.
For sure. We had Karen Ann Harlos on on Punk Rock Libertarians last night, and she just kept saying, there's no Bill Weld here. I don't have to feel like a scumbag after voting and endorsing someone, you know what I mean?
That's right.
So, and I think that's what makes is good, and it's just like we kind of forced it, you know, by being relentless.
This
and
is so interesting
in
to
the
see
late
that
Johnny Come Lately.
The Mises Party did that. Like, if the Mises Caucus didn't, if it didn't exist, this would have been a very different election. It probably would have pushed the party in a very in an even different direction from where it's kind of already going, that the Mises Caucus is trying to push in a different direction. It's very interesting. I can't find the list of vice presidential candidates, but I'm sure it's not terribly important. I'm sure not many people are going to know most of the names. But tell me about Spike Cohen. That's the... So I guess, unlike in the two major parties, in this party, the vice president is chosen via a vote rather than by being brought up by the nominee. So that was Spike Cohen, which is the Mises candidate.
Yeah. Yeah. In the vice presidential. It's weird. Like, even though, like you just said, like, we vote on, us delegates vote on vice president, that there was a lot, like, people still had their own running mates. Like, Larry Sharp said, I will not run Judge Jim Gray. And Spike Cohen was like, well, I'm running with Vermin Supreme. He didn't say he would. He said he would, you know, still be in the race if Vermin got knocked out. But
there's certain people who will specifically say, I will not accept that person as my vice, and so I will not run if you vote for them?
Well, yes, yeah, because so when Judge Gray lost out, I think, on the first, second round, he immediately was like, yeah, I'm not running. Like, he was like, okay, so I'm not running as vice president anymore. I dropped my, you know, bid. That's what Larry Sharp said.
Okay, got it.
Okay. So Spike was the guy that we backed along because it was I've known Spike, like, just as a guy, you know what I mean? I didn't know really much about him. I knew he was Ryan Furman. I like a lot of his messaging, his podcasts. I think he did. I've seen, like, a few video clips of it here and there. So you just being in circles, you know him. And, like, yeah, he's great. You know, he's like an ANCAP. He talks, you know, he has a very radical message, which is great. And I mean, he's not like, but since he was attached to Furman, now all the old boomers in the party are just like, oh, he's such a clown. He's going to ruin us, blah, blah, blah.
That was my initial that was my initial impression of him, just knowing he was attached to Vermin. So it's really good.
Yeah.
I messaged you and I was like, so Spike Cohen, you're like, he's our guy. I was like, all right, fine, good. Good. So yeah, that was the impression that I got just because of the association with Vermin. So I guess, but Vermin was a Mises candidate too, more or less.
No, Vermin was not. We wanted Hornberger and Cohen. So,
really?
Because,
so why did Cohen run with Vermin?
It's weird. It's a weird thing why they still do it now. Hmm. Like an old, like the old parties, like they still, like, they'll run with them. I don't know. I guess it's in hopes that the delegation will think that, oh, well, this is this person's guy, so let's vote for him too.
Got it.
Type
Got
of
it.
Thing. I don't know. It seems very convoluted to me, but whatever. You know.
Who were some of the other names up for vice? Was what did I have an
Ken Armstrong?
Okay.
Larry Sharp.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Mons also ran as a VP when he lost the presidential. He joined in.
Mm-hmm.
That's
it. Right. Where's Arvin Vora? Why did I hear that name come up?
Oh boy. Arvin. He was running for president.
Oh, he was. Okay.
Yeah, so he didn't win, and he was in our Maryland delegation chat, and he was just very... And he's a friend of the Punk Rock Libertarians podcast, but I don't know. He pissed a lot of us off in that, because he was just calling the Mises Caucus a bunch of fake ANCAPs, and it's just trash. He was trashing the Maryland delegation. He was trashing because we didn't support him, and he was also trashing the Mises Caucus.
That's my job. I don't know what the fuck Arvin Vora is doing that for.
Right.
Oh, man. Okay.
So, yeah, so he was president, so he didn't do anything.
Chafee's out, and Chafee's out. Chafee's just, that was a flirtation.
Oh, he's done, yeah. I mean, he's still in the LP, and he still said, you know, he'll back and support any LP candidate that gets forward. That was a few weeks ago when he dropped out.
I was going to say, as far as I know, he has not endorsed Joe Jorgensen. Looking at the Wikipedia, that could be inaccurate or change.
Maybe he just hasn't said anything on it.
Yeah, maybe not.
But, I mean, he's, yeah. But, yeah, so those are running for vice president, and... which is weird because I think because when Joe Jorgensen won, she said, I would like Mons to win, but I'll accept anyone as my candidate for VP. Like, so
really?
She didn't really,
so she was in on
him.
She was in on Mons too. So yeah. Mons and Joe Jorgensen represent the sort of the middle of this party right now.
I would think so. And that's the issue that I was fighting with people about. I was like, if Jo Jorgensen won, great. She's very pragmatic in the way she speaks. And she has a good message, and she's got a good libertarian message, but it's not a lot of, you know, you don't want to like run into a battlefield with her like would you with like Ron Paul or someone fiery like Hornberger. She doesn't really have that. And I don't know, maybe that's just me not paying attention to her, or maybe it's, but the stuff I have heard, you know, wasn't really impressive. So
got it.
Mons is also the same way. So you have the same two type of people with the same type of message, and you just don't know how really impassioned, you know what I mean? Like that could possibly be.
Yeah, it doesn't, so with it's very
Cohen being added to it.
Okay.
So what I was telling everyone is that Cohen adds the missing voice of Joe Jorgensen.
Is he, like he's an energetic guy, good at talking?
Oh, yeah. He's kind of a goofball, which is kind of good. Like, you know, as much as I dislike Gary Johnson, I thought it was funny as hell when he had that fake heart attack on that
Gary
one,
Johnson.
You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Gary Johnson is fucking funny. Like, that's one thing I'll give to Gary Johnson. He's funny. That dude is funny.
Yeah.
And maybe sometimes he doesn't, not intentionally.
Right, right. He's just so high, he just says stupid things. He's like, oh, yeah, whoops.
All right, man. So you could continue, but I just want to direct us to the next thing. Is I'm going to ask you what happened after the votes because, we had a moment where you had to you just straight up were like, I'll get back to you later, and I was like, okay, fine. So just finish up anything else about Spike or wrapping up those proceedings, and then tell me what happened.
Well, real quick. So with Spike one. Immediately, the boomers started coming out of the woodwork, and the pragmatists and the moderates of the party came out saying because they're associating him with Vermin, and so they were like, well, he's gonna be like this, and so it's so funny. You can see this dynamic of there's when Jo Jorgensen won, Reason posted out this article with the picture of Jo Jorgensen smiling nice, and it was like, oh, the libertarians and you know nominate their first woman. You know, candidate, blah, blah, and it was fine. Well, then the headline came out for Spike. They took a picture of Spike Cohen at the beach, laying in the water with his shirt off. And they said, like, and there's this, I forget the exact wording, but they're like, crazy libertarian guy somehow wins the vice presidential nomination. It's something like that.
And so Joe Jorgensen is very much within the Reason crowd.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah,
that puts
and
a lot
they
together.
Hated Spike.
Yeah. Oh,
so
really?
Spike, so then Spike goes on and and everyone's making fun of this. Oh, he doesn't have a shirt on. And there's also another picture of him, like I guess joking around. He's pulling back a shirt like Superman while he's like looking up in the sky. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen that picture of him.
Mm-mm.
And it's like he's showing some of his chest hair, and people are like, "Oh my god, I can't believe this is absurd." Blah blah blah. And so then he went on to do one of his podcasts, and he just did his whole podcast without a shirt on. And people are like, that's it, we're going to lose because of this guy. Like,
Well, you're half right. You're going to lose, but...
yeah, it's not going to be because of him, him being shirtless. There's a clear hatred of him being a part of this campaign, but they'll get over it eventually, and I don't think it's... I think the people need to realize the party's changing, and... But like it or not, it's just that's the way we're moving into, you know?
Yeah.
The age of Trump brought these people here, you know? You're bound to get one crazy candidate.
Yeah, right, right. That's right.
Yeah, so you had messaged me at the most inopportune time.
I did, because I was figuring, you know, convention's wrapping up. It's got to be calming down. I'll get to Phil now. And
no, that's when shit hit the fan, right when you sent a message to me. So... you were messaging. I was like, "Oh my god, it's happening right now. I gotta talk to you." And I was so right after we got the VP, Cohen makes his speech, and so I immediately was on with the Discord with the Mises Caucus, and I was like, "They're like, yeah, we need to end this here. Like, don't let this is where someone's gonna come in and try to change the rule or change the agenda." So I went in, hurry up, and raised my hand. Put a privilege motion in the Q&A because I was going to make a motion to adjourn because that supersedes any other thing that's debatable. Like it's you vote
really?
On it.
Oh,
if someone makes that motion,
yes.
You got to vote on it.
That's
and if you vote on it and you win, it's over.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And the agenda already said we conclude this the second part of this convention at Orlando. So there was nothing to be adjourned, like changed to this agenda. It was just a full adjournment. Well, that's when immediately, so Nick says in his slimy lawyer talk, he goes, "Well, it's been an honor and a privilege to serve you guys my three terms," and he starts giving what sounds like a concession speech or like a retirement speech or something.
Yeah.
And so I'm just sitting there perplexed. I'm like, is he really like gonna leave? And then he says, then he starts talking about trashing the obstructionist and how pretty much guilting people into having an Orlando convention. He finally says, I'm not going to be chairing the Orlando convention. So I suggest that we nominate someone to fill my spot, and I'll hand my gavel off to Vice Chair Alex Merced.
Mm.
So in a veiled attempt to get people to vote, to having someone replace him as it, because Alex Merced's also not running again. And he was trying to get, like, in a sneaky back channel way of getting someone to replace him as chair before the actual vote would come up in Orlando. And so that way, when they got to Orlando, they'd be like, oh, well, this guy's already been nominated as chair, so we'll just keep him type of thing. And it was what we had been saying for weeks. We're like, we knew he was going to do something sneaky. And it's so funny because the morning, see, that's another thing I forgot. So the morning of the convention, Nick posts on Instagram a picture of his cufflinks, and it's an ace of spades up his sleeve. And so he posts just that picture of it. And we're like, see, he's antagonizing you. He's telling you, I'm going to do something, or, oh, I got something up my sleeve.
You know what? I kind of appreciate that, to be honest. I really appreciate the commit. That's pretty great, is the commitment to being a villain.
He commits to the bit.
I like that. Hardcore. I do actually enjoy that a lot.
I'll give him that.
So the vote was shot, or not the vote, but his. So what happens that gets that to stop?
So once he does it, Alex is completely taken off guard. He had no clue this was coming.
Had no idea that this was coming either.
Yeah, he handed the gavel over to him. It was like, you take over. And so then everyone saw that as an opportunity, including Nick, to bum rush Alex. Because he's great and all, but he doesn't know parliamentary procedure as well as Nick does.
Mm.
So we have an established parliamentarian who was there, but he had really scrambled up internet. So you really couldn't communicate well with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so Alex kept on having to defer to him because immediately that's when the motions, one of the Arizona state chair who's friends with Nick said, I move to have the agenda, you know, we nominate someone right now for vice chair or in chair or something along those lines. Like someone made that motion. I might be getting it mixed up, but he starts getting bum rushed.
Right. So people. Nick hands the gavel over to Alex, and you believe it's because Alex was going to get inundated. Nick knew that, and Alex might have slipped and allowed a vote.
Yes,
I see.
Yes,
uh-huh.
Exactly. And so he even tried to. So then Nick starts cutting. Remember we talked about this line. Everyone has their order. So once Nick does this, he hands off the gavel. He just can't interject. Like, he has to go in the back of the line like all the rest of us because he's no longer a part of this thing.
Committed.
He had the mute and unmute button so he could just jump in, and that's what he kept doing. He kept jumping in saying, we should change this and we should do this, and everyone was cutting him off, trying to cut him off, saying, you can't talk, you're out of order, this is out of order. And eventually, he was just so committed to having an online convention, doing the full thing online. Like, he had already condemned, he called us obstructionists or something like that. And it was so, and this is the time, so I'm getting bombarded by the Mises Caucus. I'm arguing with people in the state, my state chat, because
Bird is texting you, tell me everything.
Yeah, and then I'm having to find, like, I'm like, holy shit, and then you message me like, hey, what's going on? And I'm like, Holy shit!
Dutch rudder speeding up too.
I think I said to you. So Joe Jorgensen, and you were like, "Yeah, Joe Jorgensen." I was like, "Spike Cohen?" And you're like, "Yeah, Spike Cohen. He's good." And then I messaged, "How's it going now?" And you're like, "Shit's happening. I'll talk to you later." And that was it.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting when you think about that. So just to summarize that first part of it. So Nick knows Alex is not nearly as experienced, and in an attempt to get Alex to slip up and allow at least one vote, potentially two, including his seat, he goes, gives up the gavel, surrenders his position in the line, at least, you know, in a formal sense, but maintains his ability to speak because he had the mute button the whole time.
Yes.
That is...
Yes.
Again, give it to the man. The man's a planner. You know? That wasn't all coincidences. That's very all well put together.
Oh, yeah. And so then he kept on trying to... then tell people, well, if we have to, because the whole point of if COVID comes back, we want to be able, so everyone, people in my delegation and a lot of other people are saying, well, we need to decide where this is going to take place because what happened, COVID restrictions go back in Florida before the 9th, you know, what are we going to do? We'll be out of a convention. Mm. And then they were, and they said that would be what costs $100,000.
Yeah.
And so the guy, the Daniel Hayes, who runs the convention, was sitting there, he was pissed off. He was like, look, I've had my hand raised for an hour trying to give people, or several hours trying to give people the facts that, because like in Austin, like we talked about this before, if you establish the impossibility clause, which is standard in any contract, you know, this is standard, that you could get out of it without having to pay because the government says people can't travel. Mm. And I kept trying to make that point in my delegation. They're like, no. And I'm like, yes, like if you can do it in Austin, why can't you do it in Orlando? Mm. And it was just so much back and forth. And Nick started saying, you're going to cost this party. And then, oh, and then here's another thing. They said, well, if we just gavel this concluded right now, you know, adjourned, then if you can't get recredentialed as a delegate. So this, and if you do that, if you have to get recredentialed again, then that's a whole new convention. So he started putting these falsehoods up.
That's not true. Why would it surrender people's delegations? That doesn't make sense.
Right.
You're just adjourning the same meeting.
Right. And the parliamentarian said, no, that's not true.
No, it's not true.
And so he backs, so I'm sitting there arguing with people in my delegation, like, no, that's not true. That's not true. And then the parliamentarian was like, yeah, that's right. That's not true. Like, that's not true.
Man.
And I was like,
for whoever that parliamentarian was. Thank God for that.
Right. And so people were. They were shitting on him, and so they're like, we need a new parliamentarian. That's what some of the people were saying in my delegate. I'm like, stop it. Like, stop. You guys are, I was like, any attempt at changing the agenda would be abused by the chair. And then, Nick starts going and like filibustering almost.
Really?
So he starts talking, and everyone's trying to shut him down, and I'm like, he's engaging in debate. Right now, you weren't allowed to be engaging in debate.
So hold on, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but so Fishman is not doing a fucking thing here then.
At one point, he did. He muted Nick. I'm pretty sure it was him. He muted Nick. Yeah.
So Nick
was still out of order.
I was gonna say because Fishman and Nick are boys.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh man.
Very much.
Nick was upset.
Yeah.
He was upset that he pretty expertly planned out a lot of moves and they weren't going through. Very interesting.
Right. Yeah.
And you know what? After nine fucking hours of that nonsense, I would be pretty upset too that my master planned.
Oh. Right, man. I know. So I don't blame him for being mad, but God, it was just so. It just sucked because like told everyone, like the people who are very pro Nick in our group, and there's some that were. And I was like, this is what's going to happen. We were saying this for weeks. This is what Nick was going to try to do. Mm. And even after it happened, they still in the delegation were like, no, I think Nick's right about this. We do need to establish this and this and that. And I'm like, no. So finally, we finally vote. We put up for a vote and said the end. Debate, we ended debate, and then we finally put forward the motion to adjourn. And that adjournment would be, and we clarified that adjournment would be to the second part of the convention in Orlando. And there's nothing you could do. You can't, and once you move to adjourn, nothing, that's comes before everything else. Any type of debate or any type of other questions.
So
in
the first move to adjournment succeeded?
Yes, it did.
Oh, good. So pretty much everybody was like, all right, let's wrap this thing up. We're good for now.
We were so done with it.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it was just for anyone, even I guess people who were like, yeah, we're kind of late, I guess, of it. They were like, yeah, even if this is the case, I don't care. I'm so sick of this. I'm done with it. Like, we need to put this to an end.
Got it. And there it goes. And that's it.
And that's I'm sweating.
And that's it for now then. We gotta wait till Orlando. But
yes,
there's probably not anything too strange that's gonna happen in Orlando, assuming there's no coronavirus things happening.
Yeah, but who knows, man? There's so much time between now and July. Who knows what's gonna happen?
So what is Nick, where is Nick at present? Is Nick still the acting chair at present?
Yes. He had not officially resigned. He just said he wasn't gonna. He could, even though he handed off the gavel, said, "I'm not going to chair the Orlando convention."
That's right.
He still could just show up and chair it.
And chair it because he is still the chair. Again, so further just kind of demonstrating, even, I mean, it's pretty obvious, but further kind of just demonstrating the move was just a move to put Alex in a bad place, which sucks because I really like Alex a lot.
And so Alex did a pretty bad, he kept consulting the parliamentarian. He was, you know, sometimes when people were trying to talk over him, there was a lot of crosstalk. He handled it pretty well. That's he was awesome. And he consulted the parliamentarian, and he did like a really good job, things considered. Because think about it, man, he was just ready to, we just got the victory speech from Cohen, and we were just like, okay, time to adjourn, we're done here. And then Nick pulls this stunt, and that went on for another 2 hours.
Oh my god.
2 hours of
I was
this,
thinking, Carr, I was thinking, God, another 20 minutes tacked on. Maybe
right.
2 hours.
2 fucking hours.
2 hours.
It was ridiculous.
So 2 hours after Spike Cohen gets voted in for Nick to say, I'm giving Alex the gavel, and then basically that 2 hours is Alex, through the help of the parliamentarian, trying to shovel shit out of the way to the end of the convention.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you, Alex, for doing your part, because that sounds fucking horrible.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds miserable. Well, there you go. So hopefully we'll have something more to say in Orlando. Maybe, I don't know, something interesting. What other positions still need to be voted on? The chair position needs to be voted on.
Before we hop into it, guys, I got to drop.
Okay.
But carry on, and can't wait to listen tomorrow.
Drive safe, Carr Campit.
Thank you so much. Phil, great to see you.
All right, good seeing you, man.
We're doing this late, guys. We're doing this late, listeners. This is a late one.
Yeah.
So tell me, what other positions are standing to be elected? Is Nick's and Alex's positions still up?
Yes.
So those are very important.
Alex and Nick said they're not going to run.
So those are very important positions.
Yeah, so that's chair and vice chair. We know that.
What's Josh? Is Josh is still?
Yeah, he's still running for chair.
Oh, fucking awesome! Okay, good.
And then so there's I think there's.
So there's a lot. There's a lot that we're still gonna have to talk about then, because that's.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Nick has been the central. Nick has been the central figure in this party for the past 4 years, so he's actually in a way more important than the presidential candidate.
In a way, yeah. In a way. I mean, most people in the media don't know him, but anyone who's dealing with the party.
I was going to say, We do. And we get to know him very, very well, and we get to know all of his fuckery very, very well.
Oh, I know. And it really sucks, man. Like, but we still got to vote for chair, vice chair. All the regional reps, all the at-large members. I think there's 5 at-large members, and everybody runs for at-large. Everyone runs.
Yeah,
and
I'm running. I'm running too.
Dude, throw your name in. I'll second it.
Hey, okay. There you go. If you are an at-large member, are you automatically a delegate?
I think so. You'd be a delegate. Yeah.
That's my way in. That's my way in. I could get my listeners.
Don't hold me to it, but.
I could get my listeners to do some stuff.
Pull some strings, man.
Pull some strings. Okay, so then to me, the most important. Well, mainly I think it's because I really like Josh a lot. Like Josh is out of many of the people I've met in this space, Josh is a fucking not only a great dude, but a great dude who constantly, because of the positions he's in, constantly gets shit on. And it's always wrong when it happens. And it happens constantly. And like you said before, it's so transparent every time it happens. And I really hope that he wins chair, because I've been pushing for him for a while, and hopefully we'll be able to get him on before that happens.
Definitely. I know he would come on in a heartbeat.
What is the... It's hard to say, of course, but what's it looking like? Like, who... Now that Nick is gone, who is Nick's...
Well, here's another thing, too. Nick hasn't signed the contract for Orlando. He's refusing to sign it.
See, it's this kind of shit that if we just had...
Yeah.
Josh in, or not even just Josh, although of course I'm voting for Josh, but really anybody who views this party as more than just a part of their ego. Anybody, man.
Exactly.
Anybody.
Exactly.
So hold on, because you have got bylaws and you have got a contract or an agreement. I don't know.
Agreement, and they're waiting to sign the contract.
So it's an agreement to change the bylaws written in a contract form.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'm speaking for the convention. There's an agreement
I'm saying
in place
is
that we're going to be in Orlando.
You already had a verbal or written agreement that stated that you were going to adjourn and continue in Orlando.
Oh, yeah. That was in the agenda. They ruled that in that nine-hour meeting.
So
that's where they accepted that there would be a two-part convention, and the other part would be in Orlando.
So that's all set in stone. Nick has no ability to change that. So one way or another, somewhere in Orlando, a convention is happening, or it's happening online. One or the other.
Yeah, now thing. And that's the impossibility clause.
Yes.
And that's so right now, Alex Merced put out an email saying, like, this isn't a party of just you. It's saying this to Nick. He was like, this isn't a party of just you. So they can override him. And I think June 1st at 12 in the morning, like, they can, the LNC members can vote to sign the contract.
LNC and members or LNC delegates?
The LNC members of the LNC.
Oh,
so Karen Harless and Alex Merced said that they would both sign the contract for Orlando.
Sure. So you and I and everybody who's in the LP has an opportunity to sign this contract.
No. So no, this is them on the actual LNC. Like, we're
got
just
it.
Delegates to the convention.
Oh, sorry. I thought you
LNC.
Said LP. Sorry, even though I said LNC. Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
So it's the LNC members very specifically who get to decide. Okay, so right now the convention is adjourned, and chances are if this doesn't happen in Orlando, it will remain adjourned until the point at which it can be unadjourned, but there may be a situation in which a new convention might have to take place. Is that a possibility?
I don't see a new convention. Any type of second part would be...
It would have to necessarily just be a continuation of the convention.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
So Nick is powerless to stop what has already been done at this point.
Yeah, he's pretty much powerless right now.
So what is the point of him not signing this contract? What is he standing in the way of right now?
Just he just wants to be petty and spiteful.
Okay,
I mean,
I
there's really, he's just talking about I don't even know if he said anything about it, but I know he's mentioned, like, this is the delegates' rights, and he's been making all sorts of whiny posts after the convention, like, you know, we have to think about potential money lost, and you know, well, he's just pretty much just grandstanding and just being an obstructionist.
So
that's
one way,
he accuses us of being.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting. I mean, that seems at least somewhat obstructionist, right? I mean, even if it's for a good cause, you're still getting in the way of what seems to be a majority of the party's desire to just continue. The party that is giving the money in the first place. That it's probably better to make a decision about whether or not it would like to waste money. I don't know. I don't know, man. Okay, but I mean, that's probably it, right? Is that it? Is that the summation?
I think so. I'm sure, like, in the middle of the night, I'm going to wake up. That's right. I forgot about that.
Well, hopefully, but by next week, this doesn't completely change. You know what I mean? Because this is ridiculous.
Yeah, hopefully. Like,
by next week, the city of Milwaukee might not exist anymore. So
right.
I have no fucking idea what's going to be happening. Yeah. Whew, let's do it. I don't know. Half the states are still in lockdown. This is still very strange. Still very strange. A lot of it is still very strange what's going on and, you know, where this convention is going to take us. But hopefully no screwery can go on up until the point of the convention, at which point I hope you're training Josh. I hope everybody is really coordinating with Josh to get this thing done, because you know there's just going to be more standing in the way, trying to change things, more trickery. I hope you got spies in Nick's office, dude. I hope you got people in there.
Right, and it's like we want these people to come forward with their stories, because, I mean, I spoke to Karen Ann on the podcast last night, and I asked her, I said, would you vote for a no confidence and a removal of Nick? And she said, she's like, it depends on the situation.
That's
she
tough.
Said, but I think there's ground. She said, I think there's ground for us to do that.
That's
yeah.
one of those things. You don't push that button unless you know, because then you set a real precedent for everybody else who wants to push that button. So be careful.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of those things. Remember the nuclear option between the two major parties? You remember when that was a thing? The nuclear option?
Yeah.
Like maybe 3 years ago, they were nuking one another. Never goes well, man. Oh, that's tough.
No, it doesn't.
That would be a tough move, but it would be very, you know, put it out on the table, if you know what I mean. So I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see, Phil. Well, Phil, thank you so much, really. I can see the listeners obviously can't see you. I can see you. There's clearly a headache. There's a headache.
It's like I have PTSD from this whole thing. Like, I was just like, oh my God. Like, it was like, I forget how many hours, straight hours it was, but it was a lot. It was at least over like 36 hours, I would say. All the days combined.
That's crazy. And you had to have a Mises caucus meeting beforehand as well and things like that?
We had to have that, and then we had meetings with our own party, and then I have to, like, it was just everything. And then you're like, oh, gosh. And this is where I was sitting. I was sitting right here the whole time.
My God.
You know, and God, it's like I'm reliving it all over again. Like I said, I'm sweating.
Well, we'll stop you now. I'll stop you here. Thank you, Phil. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Man, I hope my listeners are either really intrigued and want to join the LP or really just want to stay completely away from it, because there can't be a middle ground at this point. You either got to be so into this.
And I would say, like, for real, like, as much as, like, this sounds like the biggest headache ever, which it kind of was, it was also pretty fun.
I was going to say, it sounds real fun.
If you want, I would think if you want things to change, like, Nick literally challenged me. He said, on a post a few years ago, said, if you don't like it, show up. And so that's what I did. And I felt like we've accomplished a lot with all the people surrounding me, you know, my Maryland Mises caucus. We've been able to get so much done, and I couldn't do it without them. So I encourage everyone just to join. Like, you know what, it's pretty fun. Like, I think at the end of it, it was like, wow. Yeah. Like, this was as much of a headache it was, we did have fun. And maybe it was the fact that we don't have any sports going on right now, so I can't get to have that competitive outlet.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Politics are like the Olympics, you know? It's not often. Yeah. It's not often you get to mess around. Will it make a huge difference? I don't know. We're here now.
Right.
It's all we could do. Well, again, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. Give me all your plugs. I'm going to ask you later to send me any links towards things as well.
Sure. My links. Follow me on Twitter is at FilthyDC, PhilthDC. We do Punk Rock Libertarians podcast. We've been doing so many. We've had like Jacob Hornberger, Dave Smith, Scott Horton, Pete Quinones. We've had all of them on the past few weeks with, you know, we have nothing else better to do with COVID. So we've been having a lot of big guests on. And we got to get you guys on sometime. But you guys can check any social media. Like, we're at Punk Rock Liberty on Twitter, at Punk Rock Libertarians Podcast on Facebook and on Instagram. Just go check us out. Just find us anywhere. And go to Mises Caucus website, takehumanaction.com. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Good, man. And one more thing. Been speaking with some of my close associates, some of my friends. George Floyd brings up a lot of things again to speak about, to consider. I just want to put this out there. I wish I could help everybody state individually. Maybe I'll make a separate little podcast listing some links and places people can go. People, start joining bail funds and mutual aid societies. If you want to make a real difference outside of politics, if you listen to the things Phil says and you go, that's just a complete headache, the way you can make a real difference, join some bail funds. Put some money into bail funds, join some mutual aid funds, put some money into that. If you want to see real differences, not that politics doesn't necessarily work, but George Floyd isn't here anymore, and I'm sure his family members could use as much assistance as possible. And unfortunately, George Floyd is not a unique case. So send that money out if you want to make a real difference. It's huge. This is not normal bureaucracy where only 2 cents will go somewhere. This is bail funds that functionally pay for themselves so long as bail goes through. So I recommend everybody look, see if you can find a local bail fund, join it, mutual aid society, join it. Other than that, Phil, keep 2 hands on the wheel.